Nobody's interested because we're not giving them the news they need to get interested. They had reached Wajir's office. He opened the door and gestured her inside. No sense us fighting out in the hallway where everybody can hear us, he said. Edith walked in and took one of the big upholstered chairs in front of his wide, expansive desk of bioengineered teak. Instead of going to his swivel chair, Wajir perched on the edge of his desk, close enough to Edith to loom over her. We've been over this before, Edie. The NewsNet's Earthsite aren't interested in the war. It's all the way to hell out in the asteroid belt, and it's being fought by mercenaries, and you know who the hell cares. Nobody. Nobody on Earth gives a damn about it. But we should make them care about it, she insisted. How? He cried. What do we have to do to get them interested? Tell me, and I'll do it. Edith started to snap out a reply, but bit it back. She looked up at Wajir, who was leaning over her, his ebony face twisted into a frown. He's been a friend for a long time, she told herself. Don't turn him into an enemy. Andy, she said softly, this disaster of the starlight is only the tip of the iceberg. The war is spreading out of the belt. It's coming here. Whether we like it or not. Good. Then we can cover it. She felt her jaw drop with surprise, her brows hike up. I'm not being cynical, he quickly explained. We can't get news coverage from the belt. If it's the expense, maybe I could. Shaking his head vigorously, Wajir said, it's not the money. The belt's controlled by the corporations. Astro and HSS have it sewn up between them. There are independents. Yeah, but the war's between Astro and HSS, and neither one of them wants news reporters snooping around. They won't talk to us here, and they won't ferry us out to the belt. Then I'll go, Edith heard herself say. Wajir looked genuinely shocked. You? I used to be a reporter. Back in the Stone Age, she said, smiling for the first time. They won't take you, Edie. I'll fly out on an independent ship, she said lightly. I'll go to Chrysalis and interview the rock rats there. He pursed his lips, rubbed at his nose, looked up at the ceiling. The big boys won't like it. You mean the big corporations? Wajir nodded. I don't really care whether they like it or not. I'll go out on an independent ship. Maybe Sam Gunn will give me a ride on one of his vessels. If he'd got any left, Wajir muttered. This war is bankrupting him. Again? He's always going bankrupt. Seriously, Edie, he said, this could be dangerous. Nobody's going to hurt Douglas Stavanger's wife. There are some advantages to being married to a powerful man. Maybe, Wajir admitted. Maybe. But I don't like this. I think you're making a mistake.
Damned if it isn't the same guy who came to see me in my office, Pancho thought as she looked at the holographic image of the handsome Nairobi executive. She was in the office of the Astro Base's director, which he had lent her for the duration of her visit to the South Polar facility. Leaning back in the creaking, stiffly unfamiliar chair, Pancho saw the man's name spelled out beneath his smiling, pleased image. Daniel Jomo Tsavo. Miss Lane, he said, looking pleasantly surprised. What an unexpected pleasure. He was just as good-looking as she remembered him. But now, instead of wearing a conservative business suit, he was in well-worn coveralls, with the edge of a palm comp peeping out from his breast pocket. He gets his hands dirty, Pancho thought, liking him all the more for it. You're the head of the Nairobi base? Pancho asked him. His smile turned brighter. After my visit with you, my superiors assigned me to managing the construction of our facilities here. I didn't know, said Pancho. I suppose they thought it was cheaper to keep me here than fly me back home, he said self-deprecatingly. So you've been down here at the South Pole all this time? Yes, that's true. I had no idea you had come to the Mountains of Eternal Light, Tsavo said. Came down to check out how my people are doing here, she lied easily, and thought maybe I could take a peek at how you're getting along. By all means, it would be an honor to have you visit our humble facility, Miss Lane. She arched a brow at him. Don't you think you can call me Pancho by now? He chuckled and looked away from her, seemingly embarrassed.
Yes, I suppose so. Pancho.
Good. When can I come over, Daniel? For a moment, he looked almost alarmed, but he quickly recovered. Our facilities are not very luxurious, Pancho. We weren't expecting illustrious visitors for some time, you see, and can it, Danny boy? I can sleep on nails if I have to. When can I come over?
Give me a day to tidy up a bit. 24 hours. I'll send a hopper for you.
Great, said Pancho, recognizing that 24 hours would give him time to check with whoever his bosses were and decide how to handle this unexpected visit. By the way, she added, are you folks still interested in a strategic partnership with Astro Corporation? Now his face went almost totally blank. Poker playing time, Pancho realized.
Yes, he said at last, of course. Although you realize, with this war going on, the financial situation has changed a good deal.
Tell me about it. He smiled again. Okay, then. We can talk about it when I get to your base.
Fine, said Daniel Jomo Savo.
Data Bank, Solar Flare. The minor star that humans call the Sun is a seething, restless, million-kilometer-wide thermonuclear reactor. Deep in its core, where the temperature exceeds 30 million degrees, intact atoms cannot exist. They are totally ionized, their electrons stripped from their nuclei. Under those immense temperatures and pressures, hydrogen nuclei, bare protons, are forced together to create nuclei of helium. This process of fusion releases particles of electromagnetic energy called photons, which make their tortuous way through 500,000 kilometers of incredibly dense ionized gas called plasma toward the sun's shining surface. Furiously boiling, gigantic bubbles of plasma rise and sink again, cooling and reheating in an endless cycle of convection. Immense magnetic fields play through the plasma, warping it, shredding it into slender glowing filaments longer than the distance between the Earth and its moon. Vast arches of million-degree plasma form above the solar surface, expanding, hurling themselves into space, or pouring back down into the sun in titanic cascades. Over cycles of roughly 11 years, the sun's violence waxes and wanes. During periods of maximum solar activity, the sun's shining face is blotched with sunspots, slightly cooler regions that look dark compared to the surrounding chromosphere. Solar flares erupt, sudden bursts of energy that can release in a few seconds the equivalent of 100 million billion tons of exploding TNT, more energy than the entire human race consumes in 50,000 years. The electromagnetic radiation from such a flare, visible light, radio waves, ultraviolet, and X-rays, reaches the Earth's vicinity in about 8 minutes. This is the warning of danger to come. Close behind, a few minutes or a few hours, comes the first wave of extremely energetic protons and electrons traveling at velocities close to the speed of light. The energy in these particles is measured in electron volts. One electron volt is a minuscule bit of energy. It would take 5 million electron volts to light a 50-watt lamp. But protons with energies of 40 to 50 million electron volts can easily penetrate a quarter inch of lead, and particles from solar flares with energies of more than 15,000 billion electron volts have reached the Earth. Yet the most violent effects of the solar flare are still to come. The flare has ejected.